The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester. A week which has seen a billionaire business tycoon launch an international campaign against offshore wind power in Scotland. Aberdeenshire councillors propose a green solution to budget cuts, and Europe's largest subsea event was held in Aberdeen. The story that took over this week was Donald Trump's campaign against a wind farm planned for the coast off his Aberdeenshire golf course. The 11-turbine European Offshore Wind Deployment Centre is in the consultation phase, with a result expected from Marine Scotland before May. The war of words began on Tuesday when Mr Trump wrote to Scottish MEP Struan Stevenson. In the letter, he says the hideous and noisy structures risk devastating Scotland's tourist industry and making the country a laughingstock. Mr. Stevenson told us he agrees with Mr. Trump.
Yeah, well, I've been writing and crusading against the encroachment on our environment of wind turbines. You know, the Scottish SNP's policy of 100% equivalent electricity from renewables by 2020 is going to lead to thousands of these gigantic industrial wind turbines being built onshore and offshore right around the coasts of Scotland, literally wrecking our unique selling point, you know, which is globally renowned, you know, our beautiful scenery, which brings tourists to Scotland from far and wide. And also, you know, I've been crusading on the point that these wind turbines are useless. They don't deliver what they're meant to deliver. They produce electricity for only about 24-25% of their active life onshore, a little more, maybe 30% offshore. They don't reduce CO2 at all. Denmark, with more wind turbines than any country in Europe, has not cut its CO2 emissions by a single gram. They are not producing thousands of jobs in the green economy that Alex Salmond keeps promising, because most of the wind towers are built in Germany, the blades are built in Denmark, the gearboxes are built in China. They're actually producing jobs abroad. We're sending huge subsidies to these countries outside of Scotland. But because they're totally subsidized by the consumers, there's not a penny of subsidy from the government, all of the cost of these useless wind turbines is being passed directly to the consumers. And that's driving up our electricity bills. And, you know, a third of Scottish households have now been driven into actual fuel poverty. And business and industry are finding it increasingly difficult to meet their energy costs. And that itself is destroying jobs. So it's a completely useless and pointless technology, simply because Alex Salmond has turned his back on having any new nuclear power stations in Scotland. And, you know, we're going to have to rely on backup electricity when the wind's not blowing from new gas stations or coal-fired stations, which, of course, can be high CO2 emitters. So I simply wrote an article about this, one of a series of articles published in the Sunday Post, and linking it to the fact that Donald Trump had said, I'm not going to go ahead with my multi-million pound golf and hotel development in Aberdeenshire, because the Scottish government are planning to build a huge offshore wind farm just over a mile off the beach, right in front of his development. How, he said, do you expect me to come and build, you know, one of the world's greatest golf courses and a six-star hotel when my guests are going to be looking out their windows at an electricity factory only a mile offshore? He said it's preposterous. And he said, I know, I had a conversation with him for half an hour on the telephone in New York. He said, I know people are, you know, spreading this rumor that I'd never intended, because of the economic situation, actually investing in the rest of my project. And that's absolute rubbish. And I believe him, because he wouldn't have spent half an hour phoning me in Brussels if he wasn't so outraged at this concept. I mean, it seems to me preposterous that we go to all the trouble of getting this guy to come and build this world-beating development in Aberdeenshire on the coast, and then spit in his eye by saying we're going to build an offshore wind farm just over a mile off the very front of your development. So that's what was in the Sunday Post, and that's why he wrote to thank me and then phoned me up to speak to me for half an hour, asking how he can help in any way with the campaign to stop this vandalisation of Scotland, where his mother came from. His mother was from Lewis.
But Lib Dem leader Willie Rennie hit out, saying the tycoon was out of line getting involved in the issue. He spoke to our political editor, Colin Mackay.
Willie Rennie, what do you make of this letter from Donald Trump suggesting that Scotland could just become a bit of a joke?
I think Donald Trump should have a bit more respect for Scotland. He's planning to invest in Scotland, which we welcome. But to start characterising us as the laughing stock of the world, I think is inappropriate. Of course he'll be heard. He'll be heard like anybody else within the planning system. But he's not going to be having a right to be heard more than anybody else.
Do you think that he's trying to bully Scotland into giving him what he wants?
He obviously thinks he's got a lot of weight that he can throw around and try and get Scotland to do exactly as he wants. But he's got a right to be heard, of course, but no more than anybody else in this process. I think it's a bit of a hysterical reaction from a man who's used to getting his own way.
Speaking to our reporter Rebecca Cunningham, Mr Trump's lawyer George Soriel defended his client's right to speak his mind.
Mr Trump, like anyone else, has a right to express his opinion, and that's all he's done.
Now, after speaking with Mr. Stevenson, you know, he made points which really echo what the points that yourself and Mr. Trump have made about wind turbines in general, not even just for this development in Aberdeenshire. The two seem to really have found a keen ally in each other.
Well, this is one area that we do have a common interest and a common goal. We think what's going on in Scotland now with the building of these wind turbines on very sensitive and beautiful sites like coastlines is absolutely ridiculous. And if you want to look at the specific situation now in the Northeast or specifically in Aberdeen, to really build these massive electrical turbines right off the coastline of jewels in Gulf like Royal Aberdeen and Merkur, it just doesn't make sense, and it's really a terrible proposal.
And I mean, how does the Trump organization feel about politicians like Mr. Stevenson, you know, having this letter published in the Post? You know, do you feel it strengthens your campaign as we run up to Marine Scotland making this very crucial decision?
Yes, we think it does. He's an individual that has spent a tremendous amount of time looking at the issue of wind power and the siting of these turbines in Scotland and the rest of the United Kingdom. We've read his papers, we've seen his articles, and this is an area that we have a common bond. So absolutely, we think he could be a strong ally.
Now, Mr. Soriel, can you tell me, I know when we spoke yesterday, you're still kind of waiting to hear when the next sort of conversations might take place with Vattenfall, but is there going to be any dialogue between yourselves and the government? You know, are you just sitting waiting for this decision to come out? I mean, is there anything else you can do?
Well, we are having discussions at the end of this week with representatives from both Vattenfall and AREG. So we're optimistic that perhaps there is some middle ground here, but as a threshold issue, they must relocate these turbines and put them in an area where they're not visible from the shoreline. But yes, we're having some discussions towards the end of this week.
And just finally, from the last time that I saw you in the Northeast, obviously then your campaign was kind of boosted by Royal Aberdeen lodging an official objection to it. I mean, would you encourage others that are perhaps worried about this to do the same?
Well, we're receiving a lot of emails and phone calls, and I think we have begun what I think we have started what will end up being a very loud voice. We're not the only ones that are against the improper siting of these wind turbines. So yes, we would absolutely encourage anyone who has any thoughts on wind turbines to let their local council know, let members of parliament know, and speak up and be heard.
Then later in the week, Mr. Trump sent a scathing letter to First Minister Alex Salmond, warning he would destroy the country's coastline and economy if he continues with this insanity. In the letter, the American billionaire says, "With the reckless installation of these monsters, you will single-handedly have done more damage to Scotland than virtually any event in Scottish history." Mr. Trump says he'll spend a substantial amount of money to win his fight against offshore wind power in Scotland. He spoke to our reporter Rebecca Curran about his objection.
Mr. Trump, thanks again for speaking with us tonight. If you just want to reiterate for the listeners that haven't read the letter, tell me some of the points that you have made in your letter to First Minister Alex Salmond.
Well, wind farms are being dropped all over the world. They're ugly monsters. They're very tall. They make a lot of noise. They kill thousands and thousands of birds. Birds can't fly through these big propellers. But they're ugly, and they ruin the coast. And one of the reasons that I'm in Scotland is my mother, Mary McLeod, who was born in Stornoway. But other reasons are the beauty of the land. And wind farms destroy the beauty of the land. And very importantly, these horrible, we call them the monsters, they're made in China. They're not made in Scotland. They're made outside of Scotland. You don't get any jobs with it. They're terrible. The energy is very bad. And the problem is after 4 or 5 years, they have to be replaced because the salt water rusts them and rots them. All of the problems with the salt and the wind and all of that, they do tremendous damage to the structures, and you're constantly replacing them. All over the world, many of them are being dropped. They just sit there empty and abandoned. And to put thousands of these things all over Scotland is a disaster for Scotland, just a total disaster.
Now, obviously, your invested interest is your golf course here in Aberdeenshire, but you have said to Alex Salmond that that he will single-handedly have done more to damage Scotland as a whole than virtually any event in Scottish history.
Well, I mean that. I think that if you're allowed to build these looming structures all over the coast of Scotland and all over various parts of Scotland, I think it'll be perhaps the greatest bad decision ever in Scotland. I think it'll destroy Scotland. And I can tell you Ireland will be very happy because all of your tourism will go elsewhere. People are not going to put up with it. It's noise. They're very, very noisy. They make a terrible sound. Between the noise and the lighting, and all of the other things, and they're very ugly structures. So this would be a terrible, terrible thing for Scotland and tourism and even business. And I think it'll be the worst decision made in Scotland's history, yes.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Now for a look at the rest of the week's energy news. And Thursday was Budget Day at Aberdeen City and Shire Councils. The Democratic Independent Group on Aberdeenshire Council want to use borrowing powers to invest in wind turbines and solar panels on council buildings. The money raised from feed-in tariffs would then be put back into the public purse. Those proposals were rejected by the local authority this week, but I spoke with Councillor Martin Ford ahead of the budget meeting, and he explained how the green technology would work.
Well, the budget proposals that we will be putting forward today are based very heavily on using the council's borrowing powers to invest in renewable energy. I think everybody knows that council finances are under pressure. We have a council tax freeze. There are real terms reductions in grants. In practical terms, councils have less to spend on public services, and this is leading to some very unfortunate and undesirable cuts that we want to try and avoid. Well, the only way out of this is for the council to increase its income in some other way. And what we're proposing is that the council do what many individuals and businesses have done, and that is to invest in renewable energy. The council has borrowing powers. The council owns a lot of buildings. The council has quite a lot of pieces of land dotted around. We have both the finance and the sites to put on renewable energy installations, and we're suggesting specifically wind turbines and photovoltaic systems. There are feed-in tariffs associated with these, so the income is very, very predictable, and the council could invest in these, cover its financing costs, and leave a clear income that would protect public services, protect jobs at the council, and avoid cuts that we really don't want to make and shouldn't have to make.
So two birds with one stone, as it were, working
arguably, because we will also be reducing carbon emissions, and the council has made very bold commitments towards doing its share to tackle climate change. We will be achieving that as well. So this is win-win-win. The council's finances are protected. people's jobs who work for the council are protected, essential public services are protected, and the council will be doing its bit to help the environment and meet council climate change targets. So there really is no downside to this, and we know it'll work because lots of other people are doing it, and the council can do it too.
And are there areas in particular that you would like to see any revenue raised through this go towards?
Well, we would expect the installations that we're proposing, and initial appraisals have been done on these, so we're very confident that it will work. We would expect the installations that we're proposing would yield in excess of $2 million, around $2.2 million a year, for a full year. But we can't possibly get them all installed in the first year, even if the budget decision is made today to do that. They won't all go up by the 1st of April. In fact, none of them will go up by the 1st of April. But some of them, and particularly the photovoltaic systems, can easily be done within a few months and therefore could go up during the course of the year. So we wouldn't have the full $2 million ongoing income in the first year, but we will have a proportion of it. And the cuts that we've identified that we want to stop are particularly the primary classroom assistance, which we think is a very damaging cut, which is going to have a lot of impact on schools, and some of the cuts affecting services for the elderly and the social work budget. We have an aging population. We need to put more resources into this, not less. So we've identified those as things that we can do in the first year. Now, in subsequent years, of course, we'll have a greater income, and how the council would use that would have to be decided in the budgets for subsequent years. There will be ongoing financial pressures in the council. The council tax freeze is due to last several years, so it may not be possible to spend all of the $2 million on avoiding cuts that we already know about. But we can certainly do a lot with £2 million, and we'll be £2 million better off than if we don't adopt this budget. I mean, the council shouldn't sit there like a rabbit in the headlights, just waiting for the financial axe to fall and cutting services as required by the financial straitjacket that the Scottish Government has put the council in. I don't like the position the council's been put in by the Scottish Government. I think it's fundamentally undemocratic, and we've had a lot of decision-making taken away from us. But there are still things the council can do, and I think it's incumbent upon the council to use the powers it does have to minimise the cuts in public services and join the fight against climate change, and we can do both.
Finally this week, thousands of delegates from across the world flocked to Aberdeen to attend Europe's largest subsea event. Subsea 2012 took place on Wednesday and Thursday at Aberdeen's Exhibition and Conference Centre. Over 125 exhibitors displayed technology and expertise which allow the offshore industry to explore new frontiers and go deeper than ever before. Speaking ahead of the conference, Chief Executive of Subsea UK, Neil Gordon, told us as well as oil and gas, there would also be a focus on the renewable sector for the first time.
The conference and exhibition started in 2004 and it's now established as an annual key event recognised throughout the world. The two-day exhibition is a showcase of technology and innovation, and it's great to actually be able to get our exhibitors to showcase some of this technology. There's about 3,000 visitors expected to attend over the next 2 days, and there'll be delegates from all corners of the world. It's recognised that UK is a global centre of excellence for the subsea industry, and that's a really important part because it's of great value to the UK economy, worth about £6 billion, which is a third of the global subsea market. But Subsea UK is really there to help companies develop themselves internationally, growing their exports and looking at how they can develop in the UK market as well. But we also help them diversify into other areas. Subsea focuses on working from the seabed to the surface. And in this year, in the conference which we have on the first day, it's actually the first time we're looking at how companies can diversify into the renewable sector. Now, the subsea industry has decades of experience of working in the subsea environment, and they'll be looking at how they can actually look at some of the opportunities in the renewable sector and how the proven technology and expertise that has been developed over the years can be looked at and explored for some of the companies attending. But overall, the subsea industry is doing very, very well, and it's got a very healthy future for a long, long time. And part of the attraction we have is that it's an industry that we're looking to attract the younger generation to, you know, the oil and gas and the renewable energy. So the subsea sector is a real, real positive industry for a long, long time ahead.
Scotland's Energy Minister Fergus Ewing attended the conference on Thursday. He spoke with Joe Odber about the importance of the event for the present-day industry and the years to come.
How important is this conference becoming in the global energy industry?
I think it's increasing importance. The attendance today itself is substantially up on last year. The dinner, I understand, which I couldn't attend, was extremely well attended and very tasty. And generally, the conference is very important indeed. The subsea technology is increasingly important, obviously, in oil extraction throughout the world. And, of course, here in Aberdeen, we have been the pioneers, really, of this type of technology. From the 70s onward, this technology was, if you like, often started in this part of the planet. And now, if you go to many parts of the world, you will find companies from Aberdeen, from Scotland, involved in many of the most difficult, technically challenging subsea oil extractions throughout the world. I mean, if you're in Azerbaijan today, it probably won't be very long before you'll hear an Aberdonian accent.
I wonder if people understand about how important the changing technology is to get the most out of gas and oil fields.
Well, the Scottish Government hugely values the subsea sector and the wider oil and gas sector. It's absolutely imperative to the Scottish economy. As the Energy Minister, I'm determined to do everything I can to promote the sector as an area of business and also to work with the industry to come out with the right policies and the right strategy. We're working on this at the moment. And your question about the rates of recovery is key, because I understand the rates of recovery in the North Sea may be, you know, 30-40%, but in the Norwegian sector, another 10-20% on top of that. Now, I mean, it's obvious, it's simple math, that if we recover more of the reserves in each field, then more oil is recovered to a far greater value. And, of course, the beneficiaries are the taxpayer. You and me, the governments, are massive beneficiaries because they get additional tax revenue on greater quantities of oil recovered from each field. But it's also good practice to husband the Earth's resources to get as much as possible from one oil field before you go on and develop new oil fields throughout the world. I mean, that seems to me to be a sensible way to husband the resources of the planet. But I've been really impressed by the huge range of products and services provided by companies who are displaying at Subsea UK's conference here in Aberdeen today and yesterday. And what really has struck me is the entrepreneurship, the innovation and the drive and the capacity to transform a good idea into a viable essential product in the subsea sector. That's what struck me time after time in about 10 or 12 meetings I've had this morning with companies in Aberdeen, most of them actually small and medium-sized companies, turning over 2, 3, 4 million, employing 20, 30, 40, 50, rather than, you know, the giants. And the level of positive attitude just cannot be surpassed. And the Scottish Government is nothing if not positive. We want the best for Scotland, not second best. We are relentlessly positive in what we do, and we want to see everything possible done to meet the clear challenges ahead, which there are for the oil and gas sector in general and the subsea sector in particular.
Just finally, about we talked a lot recently about the move to renewable energy, like subsea renewables. Have you seen much of the technology already being started here?
Well, yes, I have. And of course, we want to see, and we will see, we believe, the renewable sector succeed in Scotland. Offshore winds, marine, i.e. wave and tidal, we've got the best resources in Europe, as it happens. We've also got the capacity with carbon capture and storage to combine it with enhanced oil recovery, injecting carbon into cavities in order to extract more oil and to use that as a means of EOR or EGR. So, but the general question is, what's the role of the oil and gas sector in relation to renewables? Well, the skills, the techniques, the engineering solutions for, if you like, installing, dismantling, servicing offshore wind turbines have much in common with the skills, the experience built up over 4 decades of operation in the North Sea. They're in the same challenging conditions, offering some of the same engineering challenges, and therefore what we're finding is that many of the leading players in Aberdeen, familiar names, are also now moving into the renewable sector, particularly offshore wind. And what we're seeing actually is the development of such as Mitsubishi, Samsung coming, we hope, respectively to Dundee and Methil, Nigg reopening, other possibilities at Leith, at Kishorn, at Scrabster, at Libster, in Macrahanish, in Arnish. All round Scotland, ports have been rejuvenated, jobs are being created, and a new industry is about to be born. And if it succeeds, and it will be because, I think, substantially because of the skills that have been transferred over from the oil and gas sector. So I think the attitude is changing now. It's changing from, you know, initial disinterest or this is not for us or nothing to do with us, to an attitude of, well, we can actually make this work. We can make this work in a practical way. And, you know, on our oil and gas energy advisory board chaired by the First Minister, we have people like Sir Ian Wood who gives freely of his time to give the benefit of his vast experience and expertise in this area to help us transfer that to the renewables. So it's a win-win situation for Scotland. We are truly blessed with the quality of our subsea sector, our oil and gas sector, and with the potential that we have to become Europe's renewable energy powerhouse.
And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Fiona Winchester.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stork Technical Services, global leaders in knowledge-based asset integrity management solutions.